From Countersport to Somerset, Irwin to Lansford, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Independent Fiscal Office says Governor Josh Shapiro's state revenue projections for the coming 5 years are overestimated by almost $8 billion. David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom are here for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And President Joe Biden claims democracy is at risk. How you view that threat is in the eye of the beholder. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The battle for Pennsylvania's seat in the United States Senate, currently held by Robert P. Casey Jr., is expected to be one of the most expensive in the nation. With Casey seeking re-election and David McCormick the only Republican on the ballot, the general election campaign is already underway. This past week, Americans for Prosperity weighed in on the race, placing a $1 million ad buy on internet sites like YouTube and television streaming services. Both Casey and McCormick have substantial war chests, so their ads will soon be coming to a device near you. Assuming there is a vice presidential debate this September, Lafayette College in Easton, Pennsylvania will be the site. The college is already preparing for the event and planning to host a days-long celebration of democracy. Republicans are already balking at participating in debates sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates, saying the moderators have been biased against GOP candidates in the past. Pennsylvania Secretary of State L. Schmidt spoke to the Pennsylvania Press Club this past week. He voiced a, quote, real concern over the number of county election officials who have retired or resigned in recent months. Although the Department of State oversees the election process in Pennsylvania, elections are run at the county level. A large number of county election bureau directors and senior staff have left their jobs in recent years. The pressure of election-related controversies and lawsuits is getting much of the blame. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Josh Shapiro has proposed massive increases in state spending, and his budget makes revenue projections that the Independent Fiscal Office says misses the mark by some $8 billion over the coming 5 years. Here to talk about it is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation.
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO Rebecca Euler.
Great to see you again, Dave.
Thanks so much for being with
Good
us, Rebecca.
Good to be here.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
Great to see you, David. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have the team together, and we're going to hash out more of the foolishness that's going on in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA. But just as a lead-in, and I mean, along the way, I may have said this, and the listeners may have heard this before, just a couple of foundational facts about Pennsylvania's state budget and our current financial situation. So we have what is known as a structural deficit, which means that mandatory spending is increasing at a rate faster and a dollar amount larger than the natural growth of the state tax receipts from the growth of the economy. So that's problem number one, that basically like the earth is opening up underneath our feet. This is driven in large measure by Pennsylvania's demographics, which show that we have an increasing population of senior citizens, of people who are beyond their working years, people who are not paying as much in taxes, and also people who require more in taxpayer-funded services, at the same time that our population of, again, people in their productive years is less and less. This is also driving our workforce crisis. For the U.S. Chamber says that for every 100 jobs in Pennsylvania, there are 74 workers. So you put these things together. This is the actual environment in which our elected officials are assembling the state budget. And so I would think that those would be realities that would need to be first and foremost. Governor Shapiro, it seems that he's chosen to ignore that altogether.
Unfortunately, David, it seems as if the governor's primary focus is not on taking measures to either improve or eliminate the problem with the structural deficit that you described, but instead it's as if he's going to just ignore it and move on with the idea that he can spend much, much more than he spent last year.
Well, and Rebecca, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's just nuts, right?
Yeah, it definitely is not, you know, seeing the forest for the trees, that's for sure, because we definitely, like you said, are on a long-term collision course with our demographics and our economy that we need to be doing and making choices right now that will lead to a growing economy and bringing people into the state that will help us, succeed in the future. And that's definitely lacking, I think, in what we're looking at in a budget proposal.
So for the moment, it appears that we have money in the bank because of the, you know, Biden bucks and stimulus and all those things, and also the discipline of some lawmakers to not, you know, blow everything that we had, that we do have a rainy day fund and we do have other reserves. Of course, we're going to need that to patch over this structural deficit year by year. What is the governor looking to do? He's just looking to get wild.
Right. He wanted to start off by spending significantly more than last year.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers vary, but we're talking expansively larger spending than last year. And his numbers seem to bear no relation to the crisis you mentioned about the fact that we're deepening this deficit budget that we're in. So he's talking about a plan that would, over the next 5 years, drain out excessively more money than he even talked about in his budget. He relied on budget numbers, I guess, from his staff and so forth. But the Independent Fiscal Office said that those numbers are, in fact, significantly lower, future revenue numbers that would support spending. So
okay.
without that revenue,
we're
talking $8 billion shortfall over,
$8 billion?
Over 5 years. Lower than what the governor's projecting in terms of revenues.
Now,
so
I mean,
trying to build the budget on reality and not imagination,
yeah,
that doesn't really work.
Yeah. Every time that the spending baseline goes up, it never goes back down again. There'll be an expectation that we'll spend at least as much, if not more, the following year. So accelerating the rate of expenditure, it pushes us further down towards that breaking point.
The budget is going to be due by June 30th. As we speak, the House and Senate Appropriations Committees are in the midst of their hearings where they are grilling the various cabinet officials.
Great political theater, isn't it?
Great political theater. And some good information comes out of that will help the lawmakers. And we're going to have to count on those lawmakers to stand up to what Governor Shapiro has proposed and the reckless spending he's proposed and the fact that his spending essentially ignores the IFO's accurate numbers on future revenues. So it's going to be up to the lawmakers to do that. There's no one else positioned to be the bulwark against that deficit spending cycle that we're talking about other than the legislators in the House and the Senate, and especially in the Senate,
right, holding the
where
line.
There's a Republican majority that has done, as you alluded to, has done the yeoman's work of holding onto or resisting spending to prevent this sort of budget deficit to occur in the first place and actually adding to the rainy day fund.
When we're looking at an $8 billion over the course of 5 years of deficit spending that we're looking at, how are you going to raise that money? You're going to raise taxes or you're going to cut spending. Those are the two options you basically have. So if you're a business—
In the absence of growth. Right,
exactly.
Yes.
So— if you're a business that's looking to potentially expand in Pennsylvania or even considering coming to Pennsylvania and creating jobs here in the Commonwealth, if you're looking at a state that's spending its money like that and knowing that, treating its budget like this and knowing that you're going to be faced with probably impending tax increases as soon as you get here over the next 5 years. That's definitely going to deter businesses from expanding and coming to Pennsylvania and creating jobs. So even, you know, talking about this, I hope everyone's correct. I hope you're right, Steve and Dave, that we're going to be able to hold the line and not incur that massive amount of, you know, liability in the future that's going to hurt businesses and economic development in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, the governor likes to use the word invest.
Yeah.
And, not every government expenditure is an actual investment. That invest connotes that there'll be a definite return for the money spent. And that's, in no way certain here. It also implies that you're buying something durable, like infrastructure or something that's lasting. But I mean, what the governor's talking about is programmatic spending.
And this is money that it isn't coming out of, and we're not like the federal government in Washington, D.C. We can't just create money in Pennsylvania. So it's coming out of the pocketbooks and the wallets of hardworking taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
It's being extracted from them for these different uses that the governor is proposing. Now, part of our compact as a democratic republic that allows for the government to have some powers to tax people, the deal is basically you tax us the very least that you can to get what is absolutely necessary done and let us decide where we spend the rest of the money that we have earned. And this kind of spending puts that in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to take the extra dollars out of those hardworking Pennsylvanian taxpayers' pockets in a time when inflation is rampant and it's becoming more and more difficult for them to thrive here.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. And Steve, the quote that I think of is from President Calvin Coolidge, and said that to take one more dollar than is necessary for the clear public good is nothing more than legalized larceny.
Exactly. And using the force of government to accomplish that larceny.
Well, and again, I just to get back to the point that I made a moment ago, the notion that just spending more yields better results, yields better quality, does more good, it simply is not so. And the governor wants to spend another $1.5 billion on. On public K through 12, and this is on top of very large increases that have been put in place year after year. And again, nobody is against education; we are for education. But the schools that we have too often, they not only are underperforming, not sufficiently challenging our students, a lot of them are actual just failure factories, and that those schools oftentimes are the most expensive ones.
And yeah, they're literally getting rewarded by the system. They fail year after year, and instead of getting any reform or any pressure to reform, they get more money. And so they have more money to spend and fail again and fail again and fail again. And that cycle is a bitter generational cycle that has caused generations of Pennsylvania children to miss out on the opportunity to do well in life. The stakes are high.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody agrees that education is the great equalizer.
Absolutely. And things have not improved. And I think back when I started working in Harrisburg, I think the budget, the state budget, was about half what it is today.
Yes.
And I'm not that old. I mean, I don't feel like I am anyway.
I'm right there with you.
Half. So have things gotten better in that time? I mean, I struggle to think about that. And we still lose congressional seats during every 10 years. We lose congressional seats and at every census. And I struggle because we haven't turned the corner. We're not attracting businesses. We're still losing people, and we're still struggling as a Commonwealth. So, this is big picture, but how do you change that when spending keeps increasing, but we don't get any results that we're told we're going to get?
Yeah, yeah. And the statistic was said to me where one of the biggest revenue increases for the Commonwealth has been from the death tax. Mm-hmm. And boy, you talk about an unsustainable revenue source.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to have – I mean, the death tax is essentially a wealth tax, and the
Correct.
Transfer of wealth to future generations.
One time.
And it's a one-time deal, and it's a destructive tax.
And there's nothing that says that those dollars, that those heirs who receive those dollars are going to be in the Commonwealth.
Correct. Chances are more likely that they won't be anymore. I just wanted to read real briefly a little quote from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania that they just issued. I think it weighs a lot on these issues. There's a divergence of population in Pennsylvania's rural and urban counties, with urban areas projected to grow 4.1%, while rural areas face a 5.8% decline. The projections suggest a significant aging of the Commonwealth's population, which will have further ramifications for a wide range of policy issues, including workforce needs and trends, housing, healthcare, education, transportation, and more. So you're seeing this diminished ability of our state to do those essential things that are required. And as people leave Pennsylvania, especially our rural areas where they're streaming out of, we get weaker and weaker as a Commonwealth.
Yeah. And again, we just, you know, the current generation of political leadership, they didn't necessarily cause these problems themselves, but being responsible for decision making now, they need to fully appreciate and weigh all of these different dynamics and address the problems that exist now, and not just like go and do whatever they, you know, think that they want to do or whatever sounds, you know, neat or interesting. You know, that PMA, you know, made the charge that the governor's budget proposal is just, you know, chasing the shiny object, that, you know, hey, look at this bauble and this gewgaw and this new razzle dazzle type program, when, you know, again, we need to address fundamentals, the baseline costs of creating and keeping jobs, the effectiveness of taxpayer dollars already being spent, and, you know, again, trying to find a way to make government, state government, live within its means, because the first and most necessary step is fiscal discipline and not to spend money faster than people can earn it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about the sort of shiny object syndrome, to put it a different way. But I, that's been going on for a really long time. And I think we need a new way to think about things, because that, I mean, I talked about how the budget's increased since I've been in Harrisburg, and that shiny object sort of mentality has also been a part of Harrisburg ever since I've been here. So how do you, how do we ask our political leaders to change their way of thinking and think about what we've been doing for a very long time is just not working, and how do we change that up and think about things differently?
I think a big part of it is that we need the public to change their attitude towards government. That we need government to serve well, you know, within the parameters of the Constitution and the law, you know, effectively, hopefully affordably, and then stop. You know, the willingness of the public to be beguiled by the shiny object, I think, really is the origin of this ongoing problem.
Here's an illustration of that. So in the midst of all this and all the serious business that the government has to deal with, I picked up on the Federal Railroad Administration considering two new long-distance Amtrak routes in Pennsylvania. And it struck me, imagine if the trucking industry that you were part of, Rebecca, you had to go to the government for ideas on what routes your trucks could run. And there was a big deal made of talking about two long-distance routes. Maybe in the future years, the government would be able to have the wherewithal to pull together two routes for trains. And meanwhile, there's trucks just – I don't know how many millions of trucks on the road that they can never control like that. It just shows the odd focus on the shiny objects. In this case, passenger transportation by rail – when there's actual serious business to be taken care of, which is delivering our goods and services via truck.
Well, and it's – I mean, again, if it was a private business decision by the railroad companies themselves to say, look, we need to build out more capacity, we need to change directionality, you know, that's what the market is for, of course, supervised by government, of course. But passenger transport – you know, except for areas that are fairly close to one another, people – people anymore don't want to be in a rail car for days and days and weeks. And so, you know, Joe Biden may want to, you know, build a railroad across the Pacific Ocean or whatever that thing was that he was talking about the other month. But, you know, again, the consumer demand and what people actually want, what people are actually willing to use, shouldn't that be part of the decision-making process?
I think that's the perfect segue to the fact that we're talking about the growth of government and government spending, is that people, consumers make the best decisions. The market will find the best solution. The market will reward things that are successful and solve problems. The government cannot make those decisions. The government is not well positioned to make those decisions. So the more money and the more power we install in the government, the less good decisions we'll get.
Yeah. And again, this is why we you know, government is necessary, but it's inherently expensive and inefficient, which is why you only want as much of it as you absolutely have to have, in my opinion.
And not doing that discourages people from being productive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Amen to that. Well, gang, as always, this has been illuminating and enjoyable, and we are down to the very last moments of the program, so we'll go around the horn. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you're doing?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org on the web.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. As ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org, and from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much to all of you for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. President Joe Biden has made democracy at risk a key theme of his reelection campaign. The left has seized upon the riot that occurred at the U.S. Capitol building on January 6, 2021, as the tip of a much larger spear aimed at the very foundations of our republic. Polling shows Democrats, Republicans, and independents are, in fact, concerned about the nation's political future, albeit for very different reasons. The left fixates on the reprehensible violence of January 6th, while the right is worried about the integrity of our electoral system. In 2020, Biden campaigned as a unifier, but has governed as a divider. He has engaged in harsh rhetoric, attacking his fellow Americans who support Donald Trump in the most vitriolic of terms, and has made democracy at risk a key theme in many of his speeches. This is actually a ploy to divert voter attention from the many glaring failures of his administration. His effort to recast Bidenomics as a positive term failed, because at the kitchen table, many American households are struggling with the nearly 20% cumulative inflation that is a hallmark of his presidency, while wage growth has not kept pace with inflation. Despite his efforts at Orwellian doublespeak, folks just aren't buying it. The crisis at the nation's southern border has, in many polling subsets, displaced the economy as voters' top concern. Foreign affairs are often an embattled president's last refuge. Here, too, the Biden administration has no bragging rights. The disaster that was the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan marked the turning point in Joe Biden's job approval numbers, which continue to languish below 40%. That weakness emboldened Russian President Vladimir Putin to invade Ukraine. Israel's war against Hamas has hurt Biden on both sides of the domestic political divide. What many of the polls failed to do is drill down into why so many Americans think democracy is at risk. The mainstream media, of course, parrots the Biden version, but many voters on the right also see democracy at risk for very different reasons. There is ample evidence that the Biden administration has weaponized the federal government against its political adversaries. The multiple indictments of former President Donald Trump, while Hillary Clinton and Biden himself are not indicted for crimes they clearly committed, reveals a two-tiered system of justice. Efforts by supporters of former President Donald Trump to arrive at an accurate vote count in the 2020 presidential election are seen by the left as trying to overturn the election results. The left's fight against any effort to verify that vote count stoked suspicion and seriously damaged the integrity of our electoral system. While President Biden vilifies those who challenge the 2020 presidential election And Donald Trump fends off indictment for his role in challenging that count. Democrats are already preparing to challenge results of the 2024 presidential election if Donald Trump wins in November. The Atlantic reports that several senior Democrats in Congress are preparing to not certify results of the 2024 election if the U.S. Supreme Court does not clearly rule on Donald Trump's eligibility to occupy the Oval Office. Representative Zoe Lofgren, a California Democrat, told The Atlantic that Trump is clearly ineligible and suggested she might be among those lawmakers seeking to disqualify him. There is nothing more antithetical to democracy than removing a candidate from the ballot and violating the right of we the voters to decide who we will elect. State efforts to disqualify Donald Trump based on the 14th Amendment's insurrection clause and nascent congressional maneuvering to challenge results of an election that has not yet taken place are indeed placing democracy at risk. Historically speaking, however, the nation has periodically endured periods of political risk. For example, the presidential election of 1876 between Democrat Samuel Tilden and Republican Rutherford B. Hayes took months to resolve, including the anomaly of an electoral commission being established to negotiate the election outcome and issues related to the end of the Reconstruction era. The 1824 presidential election was inconclusive, with three candidates splitting the electoral vote, and John Quincy Adams finally prevailing in the U.S. House of Representatives. Most recently, the 2000 election between Al Gore and George H.W. Bush was resolved weeks after the votes were cast by a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Is democracy at risk? Yes, it is perpetually so, which is why, as Thomas Jefferson cautioned, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The 2024 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 4th through 6th at the Penn Harris Hotel and Convention Center near Harrisburg. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Judge Jeanine Pirro of Fox News, The Five. She will be joined by a wide range of state and national speakers, including Daniel Garza of the Libre Initiative, who will discuss the importance of the Latino voter. The three-day event will also include an expanded schedule of workshops. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the nation's largest and longest-running. This is the 35th year of state-based conservative activist conferences in the nation. Get complete details and register for this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. That's paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.